Hold it. Hold it. Won't you spare me over till another hello, gamers, and welcome to another exciting edition of Game Warp. I'm your host, as always, Edward Jones, and joining me, of course, is my co-host, Miss Kim Lowe.
Hello.
Tonight we look at Man of Medan, the first in the trilogy of games which make up the Dark Pictures anthology. This game was released way back in 2019. And it was followed up by Little Hope in 2020 and House of Ashes right at the end of last year. So this is our first dive into the anthology of the Dark Pictures. The game itself is made by Supermassive Games, who we probably all best know for making Until Dawn, which we were both big fans of, I want to say.
Yeah, we were. I mean, I think we gave them full 5 stars, I believe.
I believe so. The game which sort of tapped into that sort of cheesy sort of 80s sort of slasher aesthetic while giving you the chance to see if you could help a group of friends survive the night while strange things happened to them. And we also got to enjoy Peter Stormare, who sadly isn't brought back for this one, which I have to say was a little bit of a disappointment. I don't know about yourself, Kim.
A little.
Instead, we're presented by the omnipresent creator, played by Pip Torrens. The story itself involves a ghost ship of sorts, as we've got five friends who, while on a diving expedition in the South Pacific Ocean, find themselves captured by a group of pirates, as in, you know, the Captain Phillips kind, not the Captain Pugwash kind. And they're forced to go to this set of coordinates, which turns out to be this abandoned American warship called the Madame. And on board there, they find out that there's many strange things afoot, as it's down to you, the player, to make the right choices to make sure that all your group make it out, or they will seek horrible, horrible deaths.
Along with some snarky remarks from the curator.
Yes. Much like the psychiatrist in Until Dawn, the curator basically will just either, you know, commend you on making good choices, or, you know, just basically belittle you for screwing things up as badly as you did. But I really liked the whole setup of this one. As I said, we start in post-World War II with this American warship being overrun by these ghostly apparitions which sort of bump off the crew. And then we skip ahead to present day, where we've got these five friends who, while the game's obviously trying not to go with stereotypes, it is kind of very stereotypical, the kind of the group that we have here. What did you think, Kim?
Yeah, I mean, the basic, you know, it's a basic collection of bodies, basically, of people that we have here. You know, we have kind of, like, more of the sensible type. We have a bit of the douchey type. You have a bit more of the kind of, like, goofball. You know, we also have the girls, which are more, I don't know, I mean, they each have their different personalities as well. More strong-minded, and then the other being, and then there's obviously a couple in the whole mix as well as siblings, brothers to be exact in this one.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously got the cool insecure Alex. We got his dorky brother Brad. We got Alex's girlfriend Julia, and who brings along her brother Conrad, who's played by Iceman himself from the X-Men movies. And we've also got this the captain of the boat, the chartering Fliss, who, depending on how you play it, you can get to second base with. I don't know if you push for any sort of like romantic interactions with this group, because the first quarter of this game, I've heard a lot of people criticize it because it's a little slow. You know, it's just introducing all the group, and you go down to this this crash plane, mm-hmm. looking for clues. And as part of that whole process, you can play around with Alex and Julia's relationship. You can have Conrad hit on Fliss, and you can form some sort of bond with dorky brother Brad. So. Yeah, as I said, I didn't know if you were like pushing the romantic angles, or you're just like, nope, just gonna focus on searching for spooky gold.
Well, I don't know if like because the whole thing is circled around both the pirates and, you know, I'm finding this whole Manchurian gold type of thing that they find, and they think it's a treasure, obviously, which is why they go to the coordinates, because they want to, you know, get there before other people do, and
yeah.
And for me, I mean, whenever I play these games, and I think at this point, most people who are listening to this regularly, whenever we have these choice-based games, I'm usually not pushing deliberately to have any romantic interactions, but I do try to keep everybody on good terms. I did unlock for Alex by accident, completely by accident. I did not know my choices would be like that, but somehow I unlocked an aggressive trait for him.
Okay.
And I didn't realize I was doing it until the achievement showed up, but I didn't unlock any other traits for anybody else. So I guess I was more balanced with everyone else, but with Alex, I guess I was more, you know, a little bit more, I guess, in this case, aggressive.
Yeah. I know I'm actually, out of all the characters, I think I got Conrad killed the most. He fell down two separate holes and got shot as well, so. which isn't the best, but yeah, I mean, obviously with this game, it's got that same sort of choice-based system that, you know, we used to get with the Telltale games, rest in peace, and was done so well with the Unto Dawn, where it felt like the choices you were making were actually affecting the game. And unlike the Telltale games, the fact you could lose characters, which I think is again one of the big draws here, is the fact that choices do have some weight to them. As you said already, Kim, you can get different personality traits, and we can, as I said, that when you can also lose characters in some particularly gory fashions, and I think certainly in that respect the game manages to really sort of deliver. I think there's some like 90 different ways that you can die in this game.
I think that's one of the big things that I think even from Until Dawn, one of the main attractions of supermassive games, and I guess for some people, I guess you can also talk about the same way for Quantic Dreams as well, where they have really great kind of behavioral tree for all of your characters. So everything that you do, every choice that you make, every interaction that you do can result into something different. And these games are good because they really give you the feeling that you're going to lose a character, like that you can lose a character. And you know that, especially for people who's played Until Dawn, going into, say, Man of Medan, you know that if you don't do it well enough, well, because the curator at the beginning already says it, that if you make bad choices, you could lose characters. But the game is also, I think, not too they're not too harsh about it either, because they give you chances. Like, you can make a bad choice a few times and then something bad will happen to them. At least I felt that way, because, you know, I had I don't know, because I switched between controllers, like PlayStation and Xbox, and I play Xbox controller a lot more because I'm on the PC more.
Yeah.
But there's still like sometimes when I switch between them that like I forget one of the quick times. So for Man of Medan, what really did me in was that I was playing it on PC, and then I had just finished playing a bunch of PlayStation, and then I came back and then I kept missing one of the buttons. And it was just right. Always that same one that I would miss. So it was always like, and then they would always use that as a trigger. So there was always like the first the first command would be that, and then I would miss it, and then the second and third I would get, and then so my character ended up surviving. Right. Which I was really happy, because at one point I felt like I was going to lose all my characters. Whenever something bad happens, like you press the wrong QTE, and then you're just kind of like, oh goodness, this is not good.
Well, this is the thing, I always struggle with like quick time events, and the fact that certain events are so reliant upon you being able to do these quick time events isn't the best. I have to say though, when it came to like the Sean Ashmore's character, for some reason I had in my head that he's done a lot more video game work than he has, but he's only really, he did this and he did Quantum Break and that was it really.
But I mean,
he was also in the X-Force game.
I feel like Sean Ashmore has been really thriving in kind of indie films mostly though. I mean, we're not talking about films here obviously, but to me it's like I see him a lot more during my little film festivals and stuff like that. I see him appear, pop up here and there in different movies. And I don't think, like, even for gaming, I think that's more of, like, an indie market. So I think that's where he's also building himself up as well. And I think he did a good job. Like, I think Sean Ashmore is pretty good in this one. His character is a little bit, like, I don't know. He never really plays characters like this, which is very, like, I don't know, kind of like a goofball, but not, like, but also a bit rude at times. Like, you can make him, you can turn him into a real, like, piece of work. Like, a real annoying, you know, like that annoying high school person or something like that, or college student that you don't want to deal with.
Yeah. I think this is the problem when you play these games. I'm like yourself, Kim, it's just someone who everyone to get along and be happy, so I never really pushed the conflict.
Yeah.
Too much, so I didn't actually get to see like some of the extremes that his character would go to. I just know that he dies a lot.
I think that Conrad is probably the character, depending on who you choose and the decisions you make, especially at the end. Because I don't know if you had killed anyone before the last chapter. Because I had everyone alive until the last chapter, and then I killed Conrad. So to me, I felt like he was the easiest to kill because he would be in so many of these situations where you could get him. Like, I didn't get him shot, and you know, but when we were discussing it off air, you know, I realized that, oh, maybe if that had happened and I actually triggered the right button, because that was like, I didn't trigger the right thing, so he ended up actually getting caught instead of being shot. So it was kind of like some of these things, maybe it didn't work out for a reason type of thing. So I think that that's kind of really smart writing in that sense, where like before some, you know, like they really get on the boat, most of these people should survive to get on it, and then that would kind of determine their fate of how likely they will die when they get there, you know.
Yeah. Now the actual setting for this one, obviously the ship Medan, I have to say it reminded me a lot of Ghost Ship. When I'm wandering around this, and I think maybe it's just the fact, you know, it's ghosts and things, so that's what inspired me. At the same time, it's not the most interesting setting to wander around. Every corridor kind of looks the same, which can also make getting around the levels a little tricky, because you do get sort of turned around with there being no sort of recognizable areas that you can sort of like navigate yourself way around it. At the same time, though, I did like the actual setting of the thing. I think certainly, like, these rusted walls and leaky floors, and the fact that we got rats still eating meat, like, from in a ship that was, like, left port in the 40s. It's a cool visual, but it's a set, it makes no sense here at all. And I also like, as I said, I like the fact that it's not just, you know, just the friends stumbling across on the ghost ship. You've also got the character of Olsen, who's like the head of the pirates, who's this additional threat there as well. So,
I think that in terms of the setting, I really feel like, okay, well, I haven't watched Ghost Ship, but I also feel like the setting of a ghost ship is not really used too often. So it still has a lot of space for, you know, like, there's still a bit of originality behind it. But obviously, you know, when you talk about, you know, a haunted ghost ship, there's only a few ways you can go. And I guess for the horror story element of this, or even the whole twist of the story itself, wasn't exactly like a super surprise. Like at one point, if you picked up enough notes and enough of the, you know, the story itself, you would basically be able to kind of put together what they're trying to get at, like what this Manchurian gold is, and the, you know, the whole secret of what happened on this ship, basically. And I think that in those terms, I mean, obviously we watch horror a lot, so maybe for us it's a little bit easier. But I wonder, you know, I wonder if other people would be as, you know, had that same effect of it being, because I still think it was really well written. Like a lot of the effects of the, you know, the things that are happening to them, to these characters were a bit creepy at times, and they did feel kind of menacing, the whatever spirits or whatever you call it that's on these boat on the ship.
Yeah, I found the game, I think, more tense than anything. Yeah. It's got a real sort of tenseness to it, so that when you have situations such as like when your group gets attacked by the pirates at the start, you get that real sort of tension of like when you're trying to work out how to get the best of them. Like, you're working out your plan of attack, mm-hmm. and you're trying to sneak around the side of the ship. Those things are really good. Like, when we go into the ship initially and you've got no sort of clue what's happening.
Yeah.
Those first few jump scares are pretty effective, although the game does kind of overuse its jump scares. But for myself, that was less of an issue because I'm not playing this in, like, a six-hour block, which is obviously the option to do it because you have the movie night mode where you and your friends can all pick a character and then you have to pass the controller to make the choices for that character, which is kind of a little more fun than playing by yourself, in the fact that you can have those moments where you can actually turn on your friend and potentially bump them off to save your own hide. I think it's the scene as a scene where one of the characters is being like attacked by zombies and you have the option of like helping them or saving yourself, and if you choose to save yourself, you just close this door on them and leave them to it, which I thought was kind of cold. So
yeah, well, I mean, movie night is nice because then it's kind of like a couch co-op, so you really get to have all your friends play each of the characters, and then basically then that's when kind of like each person, what type of gamer they are, really shows in the sense of like how they're going to decide on it. And yeah. You know, but I also think that this is a really nice thing because, you know, unlike Until Dawn, and because of the success of Until Dawn and why people were streaming it a lot and really making it into like a group effort, that's why they included these multiplayer modes, so that people can share them and have people actively, have your friends actively make the decisions. So, you know, obviously you mentioned the movie night, but there's also the shared story, which is two players can play co-op. And basically, I think it switches between each other. So you can switch between, like, you can pass your controller now, and then you go to the other person. So each person, you might be playing the same person, but at different turns. And that's going to craft a different type of journey for them as well. So I think both of these are pretty nifty to, you know, to try out.
And we just go back, obviously, to that branch in storyline thing. I think this is where the game, and certainly like with Until Dawn, stands out, is the fact that these choices really do have the weight to them. And with the Telltale games, you always end up on the same path. You just had a couple of details change here and there, but it never gives you the feeling that you were really, truly moving the story. And here with Man of Medan, it obviously has, I think it's like 14 different endings that you can end up with, and it falls down to like little things such as like whether the military are going to show up, if you were going to be able to like fix your boat. Just these little sort of details, but they make kind of a more different, feel like more of a different ending than we ever got with the Telltale games. Throw into the mix, obviously, the fact that this game looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
I think there's only a couple of moments I've found where like the suit motion didn't quite match up, especially in like the facials, mm-hmm. With the dialogue on the screen. But overall, this game looks really, really nice. And if anything, it makes me want to see what the other games in the series are going to be like. So,
absolutely. I have no doubts on Supermassive Games. I mean, even for Until Dawn, the visuals were pretty nice with the whole snowscape and the whole, you know, mountain and all that stuff. And with this one, I mean, when you have the ocean and you have, like, even the interior, like, I mean, I do get it. It's a boat, so inside it kind of looks very similar down the hallways and stuff like that. But they still have, like, a diversity of the different areas of the boats that you can go to. And when you get into the more bigger spaces, you know, like that whole dining whatever area that they had, and you go into more of these, like, the bigger areas where it's kind of, like, storage, and there's, like, all these tanks that, and the different, and that sort of thing. It really, I think that the atmosphere of the whole setting is also really well designed in that sense, where they really use this kind of creepy thing, this creepy setting really well, to build up with each of the different rooms, and just, like, with the amount of lighting or just, you know, or even, like, I think even up to the point where, you know, you get to, I know that Until Dawn had it also, where when you looked at certain items, there was one certain item you'd pick up, and then you kind of have, like, the premonition of what's going to happen.
Those are really great
because then you kind of, like, have this in the back of your mind. I didn't find all of them, granted, I didn't find all of them. But, I mean, I found, like, probably about 60-70% of them. And
right.
You would, and then it was kind of like, I really liked how when you had that, you would be able to, you know, it's kind of in the back of your mind, oh, when is this going to happen? And then you start seeing that area, you're seeing the character, and you're like, oh, am I going to have that choice? You know, what is it going to be, yeah, type of thing?
I knew what you're saying. And again, just to go back to Until Dawn, I think that also did a fantastic job of racking up the scares there. I think with Until Dawn, we were a little more forgiving with the characters because it had that sort of setup of being like that old school 80s sort of slasher. So these characters were more sort of archetypes, where with this game, it seemed to be like trying to tell like more of a proper sort of ghost story. So we're less dealing with less archetypes and just a group of friends, which I know some people have been dismissive of because they think that the group are a little too shallow, they're not developed enough. But to be honest, I felt for the roles that they're playing, the details we got was enough for them. And I think the fact that Conrad's character takes up a lot of the characterization of this group anyway. So
I don't know. I think that each of them had their, you know, had their own value. And I mean, for me, I really bonded with, like, I really, really liked the character of Fliss. I really wanted her to, like, if there was one character I wanted to save, it was her. So I think, like, when you kind of look at the game, I think that there's always that person who has to be, you know, you have to make sensible choices. And that's the main thing for me was, you know, basically, it was not only just keeping everybody friendly, but it was also making the sensible choice, you know, the logical choice, so that you're not, you know, putting them in danger. So I don't know. I mean, I think all the characters were developed enough, because if you developed it to a certain level, I think that, you know, there are certain things that didn't need to be too deep. Basically, your end game was, okay, well, do you want Alex and Julia to be tight and then they'll make it out together? Do you want Julia and Conrad to have a close relationship because of closer bond because they're siblings? Did you want Alex and Brad also to have that? Because Alex and Brad's relationship had direct consequence to one of the later scenes about whether who was going to go back to do something, which would end up being, you know, detrimental to what happens to the characters, obviously. And the same goes for other characters where their bond, I think Julia and Alex also had that thing where if the bond between them wasn't good, then there would also be another choice that would change. So basically the game gave you so many options that there were certain scenes where it's worth going back, because if you made a different choice and that, or their bonds weren't as strong as whatever they were, then there would be optional two or three other scenes that would take the place of that one. And that would happen various times in the game. And I think that, you know, that's where the value of, you know, having such a great type of, you know, well-developed behavioral tree comes in. So the game also has, like, a lot of replayability. And, you know, I think for me, just like, you know, just like for movies, replayability in a game and replayability in, like, rewatchability in a film is kind of, like, a really important factor. Like, game that's good enough that you want to go back and see what the other scenes are, you know?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I mean, Man of Medan, when we played it, was on Game Pass, so always keep a lookout there to see if any of the other Dark Pictures games show up on there. But you can generally pick it up pretty cheap online, or just look out for a good offer on the sales. But I would say it's one that's definitely worth picking up, especially if you enjoyed Until Dawn. I think it does takes a lot of those things that that game did so well and brings it across into this one. And it's a series I'm very excited to dive into the other two entries of. So, but Kim, what about yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, based on Wikipedia, they're supposed to have they've had 8 planned installments for the anthology, and right now 3 is out. The 4th one is set to come out in 2022, called Devil Inside Me or Devil in Me or something like that. Okay. I can't remember the name. And that one looks really good too. And so far, each of them have different direction in the type of horror story that they're telling. And I think that that's really exciting to see what other stories they come up with. And also, I think what other characters, what other actors they've roped in to do these roles. Because I feel like, obviously the next one, they have Will Poulter doing it. Who, I guess, I don't know how many people really know him, but I know him from various movies. but yeah, I'm excited to see what else they're going to do. Even if they keep the same type of style here and, basic structure of the same characters, a different type of story with these characters is going to still be really fun, because I think the balance in Man of Medan is really good. I mean, we talked about it where, there's a good pacing, there's a good amount of tension, there's a good amount of quick time events, there's so much replayability to it and the setting is done well. So I think, it might not be, Man of Medan might not be like a super unique ghost story, but at the same time, I think that in terms of fulfilling the horror type of thing that you need and like the tension and the excitement, it ticks all the boxes really well. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely down to check out the other titles, and I'm sure since we're both excited about it, we'll eventually hop into Little Hope and check that out.
Well, that brings us to the end of tonight's episode. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you haven't done already, please do hit the like and subscribe button wherever you happen to listen to us. Leave us a review, as it all helps raise the profile of the show. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and you can check out our blog, which is gamewhatblog.wordpress.com, which has got our full archive of episodes, as well as our various game reviews as well. But until next time, thank you for listening, thanks to my co-host Kim, and we'll be back very soon with another game. But until then, good night.